1 Samuel chapter 18. This is another continuing of our study in the life of David. And, you know, when good things happen to a person, it doesn't necessarily mean that God is blessing them. You know, sometimes people look at things and say, oh, everything's going great for them. God's blessing them. Or I've heard people say, you know, everything seems to be going great today, so apparently God's pleased with what I'm doing. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. But sometimes that could be true. But God promises, He does promise to bless those who do right. Right? That's an important thing for us to remember. Psalm 1, verse 1 says, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of the sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. So God said, I will bless those that don't do wrong, that they do right. I will bless those that do right. And that is a truth that is throughout the scripture. Now, David had just killed Goliath. Last week, chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, we saw David killing Goliath. And God blessed him as a soldier. God blessed him as a soldier. And that's important for us to see. And so this evening, I want us to look at three qualities in David's life that enabled God to bless him. You know, every one of us here tonight, if these three qualities will be in our life, if they'll be in your life, God can bless you. If you get these three qualities in your life, God can bless you. Now, there may be ways that, if it doesn't mean that these three cover all the areas of our life, but they cover a lot of our life that'll help us to be able to be blessed by God. If you want God to bless you, you need these three qualities. Number one, David's first quality was that his character attracted godly friends. His character attracted godly friends. Look at verse number one. And it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of his robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even unto his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. All right, now, think about the situation. David and Jonathan. Now, we don't know how old Jonathan was. Many people suspect, and I think probably this is true, that Jonathan was a little bit older than David. They probably weren't the same age. He was probably a little bit older than David. But no matter how old he was, when Jonathan saw David's character, Jonathan loved David. And this was a very special relationship that they had. He saw that the Lord was with David, and we saw that back in chapter 16 and verse 18, that God was with David, and that Jonathan would have heard of that. He would have known that as well. Remember, who was Jonathan now? It's important for us to know that. Jonathan was the prince. He was the next in line to be the king. Jonathan was Saul's son. Firstborn son. And everybody in the kingdom knew that the firstborn son would be the next king. So Jonathan was the one that people said would be the next king. But God had said David would be the next king. And Jonathan didn't know that at this point, I don't think. But Jonathan could see in David leadership. He could see that David was a man of leadership. He saw that in the way that he stood up to Goliath. He didn't run and flee like everyone else did. And so it's important for us to see that in chapter 17, in verse number 24, we see the leadership there in his life. 17:24, it says there, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, speaking of Goliath, fled from him and were sore afraid. All right. Now, what did David do when he saw that? Instead of fleeing and running, he said, what's going to happen to the guy that kills him? Oh, the king's going to make you his son-in-law. And you'll be free, and your family won't have to pay taxes. And news gets back to Saul, and he says, call that young lad in. I want to have a talk with him. He was not afraid. And David went out to fight Goliath, and Jonathan was there. You know, he's right by his dad the whole time. He's seeing the whole thing. He sees all this unfold. Here's a young man that is not even a soldier yet. He's just a shepherd, but he's courageous. He's not afraid. Everybody else runs when Goliath comes. And David says, somebody needs to stop him. He's a wicked man. He's against God. Somebody needs to go out there and fight him. And I'll do that. I'll go fight him. And, you know, and Jonathan saw that. He saw in David the character of a leader. He also saw in David that he trusted God. All right, yes. Yes, Jonathan walked with the Lord, and Jonathan was a godly man. And it's important for us to see that. Jonathan loved the Lord, and he loved this in David. And he saw that David had trusted God. Chapter 7, verse 37, or 1737, it says that, and David was, David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with you. All right, so David stood before Saul. Jonathan's right by his side. He hears all this. He sees David being brave. And Jonathan's thinking in his heart, I wish I had the courage of that young lad. I wish I had his bravery. I wish I was as courageous as he is. He is a leader. He is a man who trusts God. He is not afraid. And down in verse 50 of 17, we see, so David prevailed over the Philistine and with a sling and with a stone, and he smote the Philistine and slew him, and there was no sword in the hand of David. So David killed Goliath, and Jonathan saw all this. He's watching all this. He's observing all this, and he sees this in David's life, that David is a man who trusts God. Not only that, but he sees that David was a respectful young man. Verse number 58 of 17, it says, and Saul said unto him, whose son art thou? Thou young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Right? He spoke to him very appropriately, very respectfully. He respected his leadership, the leadership of the king, and he spoke to him very respectfully. Now, Jonathan is observing all of this, and Jonathan saw that, and Jonathan was a godly man that loved these qualities in David's life. He could see that, and he loved him. Verse number 1, again, it says, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Throughout the life of Jonathan and David together, many times we'll see how Jonathan loved him. Jonathan loved him, and David loved Jonathan. You know, it wasn't a physical love as weirdos. It was a love, a genuine love, based on character. Why did Jonathan love him? Jonathan didn't love him because he was cute or something like that. He loved him because he was a man of God. He had character. He was a man that God respected because of what he stood for. And so Jonathan loved him for that reason. I like what one commentator said. He said, here was a fellowship of souls. On the part of Jonathan, it was more remarkable inasmuch that as David became his rival for the throne. But even after this became well known, Jonathan's love never cooled, but rather warmed with intenser devotion to his friend. And he often gave him aid and comfort to the son of Jesse in the time of persecution. Even after Jonathan found out David was going to be the next king, Jonathan could have said, I don't like you anymore. I was going to be the king. And now you're going to take my spot. I don't like that. But he didn't do that. He loved David. He said, David, I know. Well, later on we're going to see how Jonathan comes to him and says, I know that you're going to be the next king. And I know that my father has been evil. And you are righteous, and you are going to be the next king. When you become the next king, promise me that you won't kill all my family members. Because that was a pretty typical thing. If a new king took over, you kill everybody out of the other old family, because if you leave any of them alive, then some of them are going to rise up and try to take your spot as king. So Jonathan said, promise me that. David said, I promise. I won't do that. I will take care of your family. And David did. David, we'll find out later on in David's life, how that David did take care of one of Jonathan's sons, after he became king. And he was a blessing to him. Now, David's godliness powerfully attracted him to Jonathan. It was that godliness that attracted him, and Jonathan's heart yearned for that. He wanted to be that kind of a man. He wanted to be around a person who had strong character, who had the character of a godly person, a character who would do right and stand up for what is right. You know, good or bad, you will attract friends that match your character. Now, that's something to think about. Whether you have good character or bad character, you're going to attract friends that match your character. Because if you are godly and you're around ungodly people, they're going to feel uncomfortable. Say, I don't like being around them anymore. They're too churchy. I don't like that. Or whatever. But if you're godly and you are around people and they say, I love being around them. It just builds me up. I like that. You will attract the kind of person you are. And so it's very important for us to develop character in our lives like David did, so that we will stand up for what is right, so we will do what is right, so we will obey God, and we're not going to be afraid to stand up and do right and please God. David was a man with godly character. He had solid character. He loved the Lord, and the Lord was with him. He trusted the Lord. He was a man of respect, and he attracted Jonathan's friendship and this loving friendship based on his character. You know, that is the best thing. You young people especially need to understand this. The number one thing that you need to find, especially when you're looking for a spouse, is you need to find a spouse that has godly character. Godly character. Because what often happens is, you know, young people, they see somebody and say, oh, they're so nice. They treat me nice. And they're so handsome. Oh, they're so nice looking, or she's pretty, or whatever it is. And all these kind of things, and your heart all flutters, and you forget all about, you ask them, are they godly? Well, I don't know, but they're sure nice. They're sure pretty. Do they go to church? Well, I don't know that either, but I like them because they're cool. No, that's all wrong. See, the first thing you look for is godliness. The first thing you look for is godliness. Because their character is what's going to last for a lifetime, not their looks. You know, you guys, you marry some beautiful woman, and 20, 30 years later, she's got a bunch of wrinkles and not as pretty as she was when you first married her. Well, you say, she's well wore. Oh, no, I don't want her anymore. No, you're marrying her character, not her person. Everybody wears out and gets old. That's part of life. So you need to make sure you love their character and that they got character that is godly. Jonathan appreciated David's character, and it attracted him to him as a friend. And you know, that ought to be the thing you look for in other friends, is what is their character like? If there's somebody that is, they have bad character, they cheat, they swear, they are unkind, they're rude to their parents, they're disrespectful to people, that's not the kind of person you want as a friend. They're going to lead you the wrong way. You need to find someone that is godly, someone who is upright. You say, Pastor, they don't exist very much. Well, you're better off having no friends than having ungodly friends. That is the honest truth. You're better off with no friends than to have ungodly friends. Because ungodly friends will lead you astray. If you have no friends, you got nobody to lead you astray. All right? You are far better off without any than to have ungodly friends. So choose your friends carefully. Make sure you're basing your friendships on character. So, first thing is that David, his first quality was that his character attracted godly friends. Number two, David's second quality was that his behavior was admirable. Admirable means to be admired. It's something that can be admired. Something you say, wow, that is really awesome. He's got some good behavior. His wise behavior was admirable. Saul admired David's behavior. Look at verse number 5. And David went out with whithersoever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now remember, David was not a 40-year-old general in the army. He was a young man, probably about 23, 24 years old. And they couldn't even start in the military until they were about 20 years old. So David is young. And yet, what does Saul do? Saul says that young man has got leadership ability far above his years. I am going to put him in charge of some of my military. And he made him a leader over some of the men in the military. Later on, we don't know exactly how long it was, but a few verses later, there's some time had passed, and we find in verse number 13, look at verse 13, it says, and therefore Saul removed him from him and made him captain over 1,000. Now he becomes a captain of 1,000 soldiers. See, David is put in a place of leadership. Why? Because of his wise behavior. He behaved himself wisely. Now, the word wisely there is a word that means prudent. It means he was circumspect, wise in understanding. He had insight. He gave attention to matters. He pondered things. He considered things before he takes action. He is one who doesn't jump in without thinking first. He was prudent. Prudent means very, very careful. You know, if you're a prudent person, you're not going to easily be tricked. Now, when people come knocking on your door selling something, you know, they're trying to convince you that you need what they have, even if you don't need it. And they'll give you this big old story, do you really need this? Well, you might not need it at all, but they're going to try to convince you. And gullible people say, oh yeah, I guess I do. All right, where do I sign? I'll buy it. And they get it and think, what do I need this for? I don't know, but they made it sound like I needed it. It was the best thing in the world. So gullible people fall for it. Prudent people say, no, I'm going to think about this. I'll think about it. I'll pray about it. And you know, when you go shopping, same thing. Be prudent. Look at the prices. Check in one store. If you're buying something that's fairly expensive, check in one store. Don't buy the first thing you see. They'll say, on sale. You know, 5% off. Well, you go to the next store and it might be cheaper yet. And it wasn't even on sale. But if you are quick to buy and say, oh yeah, I'll buy it quick before it's on sale, you know, and you aren't prudent, then you buy it and then later on you say, oh, could have got it cheaper if I would have looked over there. Yeah. And so if it's a little dinky thing, maybe it doesn't matter, but if it's something that costs quite a bit of money, you're wise to do that. So be prudent, be careful, circumspect. Remember that word? Circumspect means it's the person who walks very carefully. And I've told you before, but I'll tell you again, because maybe it'll stick in your mind like it did mine. Years ago, I heard a preacher describing what it means to be circumspect. And he was telling about a preacher that would go to a farm. And when you go out to a farm and you got your Sunday clothes on, and you're going out to see the cows, you step very carefully when you're walking through the cow paddock so you don't step on all the cow dung. All right? And that is being circumspect. Watching carefully where you're going to put your foot. And same thing as in life. If you're going to live circumspectly, that means you're going to stay away from some places that are bad. You're going to look away from some things that are bad. You can't even go to the shops. Yesterday, my wife and I were in the shops, and we passed one dress store, and she says, oh, look at there. All the dresses are fairly modest. And we get to the next one, and it's an underwear store. I said, not there. That one's not a one. You have to look the other way. You know, but you need to be circumspect. Watch where you're going. Watch what you're looking at. Watch what you're thinking about. Watch what you're reading. Be careful. Don't fall for everything. Be circumspect. So David here behaved himself wisely. He was prudent. He was circumspect. He was careful. He was watchful of what he did. And this quality is something all of us need. Every one of us in this room need to be wise like David was. We need to be prudent like David was. And it'll make you a far better person if you will do that. Now, the book of Proverbs tells us that this kind of wisdom comes from God. It comes from God. Proverbs chapter 9 verse 10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So if you fear God, God will give you wisdom. Fearing God means respecting Him, honor Him, and if you're going to respect and honor God, that means you need to obey Him. Obey Him. Obey what He says. Do what God tells us to do. Spend quality time with God. And spend time in the Bible. Spend time in prayer. Obey God in all that you do. And then it'll help you so that you can have wisdom. And this is the key, Solomon says. Fearing God is the key to getting God's wisdom. And Proverbs chapter 2 verses 1 to 6 tells us how to get that wisdom. He says, my son, if thou receive my words and hide thy my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart unto understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as for silver and searchest for her as for hid treasure, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and shalt find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of His mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. So God says, if you will seek it, you will look for it, you will search the Scripture for it, and say, God, teach me how to be prudent. Teach me how to be godly. Help me to know how to do right, make right choices and right decisions. God will teach you and He'll give you that wisdom. One of the best places to find wisdom is by studying the book of Proverbs. Study the book of Proverbs. You young people, study the book of Proverbs. It's full of wisdom, wise advice for young people and everyone. All right, now Saul set him over his men of war, verse 5. He also set him over his, he made him a captain of 1,000 later on. And David at this time was still young, but he was a man of character, a man of that wisely behaved himself. Not only did Saul notice this, but also other people saw this in David. We look down at verse, we saw in verse number 5, look at verses 6 and 7. Verse 6 and 7. Verse 6 says, "And it came to pass that as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines and joy and with instruments of music." All right, so here's what would happen. When the soldiers would come home from war, the women would come out leaping for joy and excited, and they had musical instruments, and they were singing and leaping for joy because the army had come home and they had won the victory and they had defeated the enemies, and it was an exciting time. You know, there was other times when they'd come home from the war and runners had gone before and said, "We lost the battle." Nobody came out to sing then. The soldiers came home kind of hiding, and they'd sneak in the city, ashamed of themselves because they lost the battle. And oh, it was a time of weeping and mourning. Instead of leaping in joy for happiness, they'd come out and weeping and mourning, and you hear the people crying and mourning because thousands of their soldiers had been killed in battle. But here, they're leaping in joy and excitement, and they say in verse number 7, "And the women answered one another as they played on their musical instruments and singing to each other, and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. So everybody could see, not only was David a leader, but he was a soldier now. Now whether David actually had killed 10,000 or not, that's not the point. The idea here is they were lifting him up in a kind of an exaggerated rejoicing praise that our soldiers are home and Saul's killed thousands and David's killed 10,000. Our battles are, we're winning the battles. It's going well for us. They're all excited about it. So we see here that he's admired by the people. They loved him because he was wise and he was prudent and he was careful. And the people could see that in David's life. But Saul, his admiration soon turned to jealousy. Verse number 8. "And Saul was very wroth," means he was angry, "saying, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s and to me, they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" All right, Saul was saying, this isn't fair. It's not right. They said that I have killed thousands, but they said David, this young soldier, has killed 10,000s. Everybody loves him. What more can he have besides the kingdom? He's after my throne. I don't like that. And he was jealous. And from that time on, he tried to get David. Look at verse 9. "And Saul eyed David from that day forward." Means he watched him with jealousy, anger. "Someday I'm going to get rid of him. I got to get rid of that boy, that young man. I'm going to get rid of him somehow. I'm going to watch him and wait for an opportunity." And he was looking for an opportunity to get rid of him. Verses 10 and 11. Verse 10 says, "And it came to pass that on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice." So Saul calls in David to the throne, and he says, "David, play your harp for me. The evil spirit's on me again, and I'm feeling grumpy. Play the harp." So David plays the harp to soothe his heart, to soothe him, and the evil in his heart is, just in the kid. So he takes his javelin, threw it at David, and he missed. Says he did it twice and missed. Now, we need to remember, Saul was not a sloppy soldier. He was the king. He was a very good soldier. He didn't miss when he threw his javelin. He was a good marksman. But he missed. Why did he miss? He knew why he missed. He knew it was because God was with David. God was with David. And that made him even more angry in his heart. But as we think on this, remember, David behaved himself wisely and people admired him for it. Saul wanted the admiration that David got without earning it. Saul was jealous because he said, I want people to love me like they love David. But he hadn't earned it. He was not a good king. He was not a good leader. He was not an obedient man. He had disobeyed God. And God was displeased with him. And God was against him now because he had displeased God. He became jealous, and jealousy is sin. You know, there's potential for us to become jealous when other people around us get things that we wish we had. It's not fair. Why did they get that? I deserved that. Why did they get that job? I needed that job. Why did they get that promotion? I should have got that promotion. Why did they get a good mark and I didn't get a good mark? And there's jealousy. Sometimes we're jealous of our spouse. Sometimes we're jealous of our brother or sister. Sometimes we're jealous of somebody at school. You know, they got a nice home, a nice fancy, or maybe they get a new car. Whoa, their dad bought a brand new car, and what do I got? I got nothing. I'm pedal bikes, all I got, you know. And you know, there's jealousy. We need to be careful. God says we should not be jealous. We need to be thankful for what God has given us. God doesn't give us all the same thing. You know, God may give some people some good things, and others may not have them, but we need to be pleased. In fact, the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 12 and verse 15, we need to rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. In other words, when someone's rejoicing and said, I'm so excited, this blessing happened to me, instead of saying, oh, I wish it would have happened to me instead of them, we need to rejoice with them. Be glad that they got a blessing instead of wishing you got the blessing instead of them, because that's not right. We need to be pleased with them. It's kind of like the prodigal son. Remember the prodigal son and his brother? The prodigal son ran away from home, spent all his money, wasted it on riotous living. When he came back, his father gave him a party. And the older brother hears the music and says, what's going on? He says, playing music for my brother. Oh, my brother's a rotten, no good. He ran away and wasted all dad's money. And now dad's giving him a party. Dad's never given me a party. That's not right. He was mad. He wouldn't even come into the house. His dad said, come on in the house and join the party. Nope, I'm not going in. You shouldn't have gave him a party. You've never even given me a kid for my party, and you killed a fatted calf for him. That's not fair. And he was jealous. All right? And his dad tried to explain it to him, but he didn't want to listen. So it's important for us to learn from these things. Learn from what is happening in David's life. David was not out trying to get fame and fortune. He wasn't out trying to brag about himself and get people to side up with him. He was just doing his job. He was a man who behaved himself wisely. I wonder how wisely do you behave yourself? How prudent are you? How careful are you? How circumspect are you in your choices? Not just in your shopping choices, but in the choices you make as a Christian. The choices of things that you do. The places you go. The things you read and look at and play with. And what do you do? What kind of a person are you? Are you a person who is wise and prudent? If not, you need to ask God to make you a prudent person and a wise person. So number two was that his wise behavior was admirable or admirable. All right, number three, David's third quality was that he walked with the Lord and this shone brightly. His walk with the Lord shone brightly. Everybody could see that he was walking with God. Verse number 12 says, and Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and he was departed from Saul. Now notice that. That's pretty significant. He was afraid of David because the Lord was with David. And Saul knew it. Saul knew that the Lord was with him. He knew he was with him because he knew that he'd thrown those javelins at him. And he said, there's no way I could have missed that kid. He wasn't that far away. I should have hit him. Why did I miss? He says, I know why I missed. Because God's with him and God's not with me. And he knew that God was with David. And that was a special evidence in David's life. You know, this tells us that David was right with God. David was right with God. There was nothing between his soul and the Savior, the Lord. And he was walking in fellowship with the Lord, and others could see that. You know, some Christians have their lives that shine for the Lord. They genuinely are godly. And they freely talk about what God is doing in their life. And they happily tell you about what they've learned in their Bible reading and what they've learned as they spent time with the Lord. And they witness for the Lord and it just flows from their heart like a fountain of water. And they, every time you're with them, you go away being lifted up and feeling closer to the Lord. You know, there's been times I've been with people like that. I wish that there was a lot of people like that, but there's not as many as there should be. But you know, when you're with somebody like that, that really is a godly person, and every time you're with them, you go away feeling like, whew, I feel just closer to God because I've been with them for a while. That ought to be true of all of us. That ought to be true of my life. It ought to be true of your life. We ought to have that as our passion and as our goal, because you know, that is the normal Christian life. That's the normal thing God wants for us. He wants all of us to have that kind of our life where we're walking with Him and having a close fellowship with Him and are drawing near Him. Now, Saul was afraid of David because he knew that the Lord was with him and he had departed from Saul. And this upset him. Now, knowing this did not change Saul's hatred. He knew God was with David, but it didn't change his hatred. In fact, it just seemed to intensify it. When he set him over this captain, made him captain over 1,000 in verse number 13, the reason he did that is hoping that by being a captain of the army and being out there in the front lines of the army, that David would be killed by the enemies. He was hoping that would happen, but it didn't happen. David just became a greater soldier and more popular with the soldiers and the people of the land. And it backfired on Saul. And Saul is getting more furious. And he's trying to find ways of killing David. And so Saul devises some plans. Verse number 15. And wherefore, when Saul saw that David behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. And Saul said unto David, behold, my elder daughter Merab, her will I give thee to thee to wife. Only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul said, let not my hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. So he makes his deal with David. He says, David, how about being my son-in-law? I'll let you marry my oldest daughter. But here's the catch. You go out and fight the battles for the Lord in a valiant way. You become a valiant soldier and I'll let you marry my daughter. Well, David does. Saul didn't keep his promise. He didn't keep his promise at all. And verse number 18, and David said unto Saul, who am I that I, and what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be the son-in-law to the king? But it came to pass that in the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given unto Adriel, the Meholathite, to wife. But verse 20 says, and Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, thou shalt this day be my son-in-law, and the one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servants, and so on. We won't take the time to read all that, but Saul told his servants, all right, you go tell David, I want him to be my son-in-law. And he made a deal with him. And David said, well, I can't be the son-in-law of the king. I'm a poor man. I don't have any money to pay for the bride price. There was a big bride price in that, especially if you're going to marry the king's daughter. Whew, that'd be an enormous price you'd have to pay for her. She's the king's daughter. So he said, I don't have any money. I'm a poor man. I can't do that. And so Saul makes him a deal. All right? And he says, in verse number 25, and Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king desireth not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to avenge the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So he said, you go kill 100 Philistines and bring back evidence that you've killed them, and I'll give you my daughter to be your wife. So David went out and he says, well, let's get twice as many. And they killed 200 Philistines and brought back the evidence. And Saul says, okay, I'll give you my daughter. And Saul was upset again because it failed again. He was hoping David would get killed while he's trying to kill these 100 Philistines. But nope, it didn't get killed. He got twice as many as Saul required. Brought them back to him. And Saul lets him marry his daughter. Now, Saul knew that the Lord was with David. Look at verse 28. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David. And Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass that after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. See, David continued to behave himself wisely. He continued to be wise and prudent and careful. And people could see that in his life. And Saul knew that. Saul was upset. Saul was trying to kill him. He tried to kill him with a javelin. He's going to do it some more. He'll throw the javelin at him again later on, trying to kill him because he wanted David dead. He said, if David is alive, he's going to take my throne away from me and Jonathan will never be king. Later on, he rebukes Jonathan for being his friend. He says, Jonathan, you foolish son, you know that as long as David's alive, you're never going to be king. You need to see him dead so you can become king. And Jonathan said, Dad, that's not right. David's a godly man. And they could see that in his life. Now, if you will try to walk close to the Lord, it's going to shine brightly in your life. Everybody knew David walked with God. Everybody knew God was with David. And everybody ought to know when they see your life and mine, they ought to say there's something special about that person. Their life is different. They walk with God. Every time I'm around them, they're talking about the things of the Lord. They're shining for the Lord. They're being a witness for the Lord. They're telling people about Christ. They're passing out tracts. They're being a witness. And every time I'm with them, I just feel closer to God because of their relationship with God. It's so powerful that it just makes me feel close to God being with them. That ought to be true of all of us. It really should. And we need to strive for that and ask God to make us that kind of a person. So, as we look at this, God was able to bless David for three reasons. Number one, he was able to bless him because his character attracted godly friends. He had good, godly character. What's your character like? Number two, he was able to bless him because he behaved himself wisely. And people admired him. He behaved himself wisely. Are you behaving yourself wisely? Making wise, prudent decisions, careful in judgment, and in your choice of things that you do in life to please God. And then, number three, God was able to bless him because his walk with God shone brightly. Everybody could tell David walked with God. David was a man of God. You know, that ought to be true of all of us. Every single one of us here tonight profess to know Christ as your Savior. And if you truly know Christ as your Savior, there's no reason why each of us can't strive to be like David, to behave ourselves wisely, to be prudent, careful, to be a person of character that loves God, walks with God, and a person who's, it shines in our life that Christ is in us and that we love the Lord and the Lord is working with us and walking with us. We ought to strive for that end. And so we need to do like the Apostle Paul, when he said, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Press toward the mark. Press toward the mark. Say, I want God to be pleased with my life. And I'm going to do everything I can to live the kind of a life that would be pleasing to God. And the Lord will bless us if we'll do that.